Well, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on the program with the same name. Welcome to tonight's edition. We don't have any guests lined up tonight, do we? Nobody's supposed to be. Just us and this rainy night and another rainy night in Georgia. Here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. We had an interesting experience with Molly on Saturday. I want to share with you because you know that's what I do. A couple of things. However, this is kind of weird. I was listening tonight to some news report. It may have been online. It may not have been. I don't remember. But in this age of the H1N1 virus, why are Catholics who take communion hesitant in sharing the chalice that contains the wine, or if you are a real Catholic, the blood of Jesus? Isn't the blood of Jesus sacred? Wouldn't that sacredness destroy whatever microbes might be? You know, I don't quite get that. If you're Catholic, maybe you'll send me an email and explain to me why. The Catholic ritual of transubstantiation, which changes the bread and the wine into the body and blood of Christ. I would think that the body and blood of Christ would be immune, wouldn't you think, from H1N1 viruses? And people can say, well, it's not the body and blood, Mike, it's the spit on the shared cup. I would think, though, that something that contained the sanctified body and blood of the Savior of the universe would be immune from, you know, a virus? Am I allowed to ask that without pissing off every single Catholic in America? It's weird, isn't it? All this talk about not holding the trials of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and some of these other people have been held at Guantanamo all these years. The thing is starting to get to me. It's turning my stomach is the fear that's being generated by these right-wing cowardly bastards. It is right-wing fear and cowardice that makes this entire argument against trying the detainees from Guantanamo, New York City. That, of course, and their utter disrespect, the right-wingers, for our constitutional protections where it concerns the right of the accused. That's the part that they hate. There are two things at play here. The right-wingers are cowards to the last man. I don't care. Rank-and-file Republicans are the biggest crybabies I've ever seen. They run around the woods with their goddamn guns and play toys and, here, take target ready. Cowards. Stinking cowards. Every last one. Elected Republicans are even worse. Because they immediately become whores, prostitutes, no offense to real sex workers, for corporate America, like a lot of Democrats do. But the one thing that all Republicans in this country despise is the original 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, the so-called Bill of Rights. And it's within the Bill of Rights where you find a lot of protections, plus Supreme Court rulings over the years, where it concerns the rights of people accused. Now, the same right-wingers who scream and wet their pants about government power, these same right-wingers would deny protection from that government power to people accused of a crime. The same right-wing cowardly sons of bitches who would demand every single lawyer they could get their hands on and are very glad for the Miranda ruling that says, well, if you don't have a lawyer, one will be provided for you. They are the ones who want to deny people charged with the single most hideous crime against the United States from even having representation. Isn't that so typically Republican? They are cowards. And they hate the Constitution. Every time I hear one of these swine talk about, well, you know, I believe in the Constitution. No, you don't. You don't believe in the Constitution at all. You disrespect the Constitution. You would use it as bathroom tissue if you had a chance. Plus, you're a coward. So it's that fear and cowardice. You know, this United States of America, we have laws in the books. We have, you know, Noriega was tried in this country. The original Trade Tower bombers were tried in this country. After being, one of them was caught in Afghanistan, dragged back here and put on trial, convicted. He's serving in a supermax. God, I hate Republicans. Just cowardly little right-wing jerks. And they do hate the Bill of Rights. Always have, always will. You can smell their fear. Have you ever noticed that? Hang out with Republicans long enough, and that smell that starts to penetrate their clothing, that is fear. They're afraid of everything. They're afraid of their own laws. They're afraid of their own security system. They're afraid of everything. And what's up with Northcom? Do you remember Northcom? Do you know what that is? You know, that's Northcom is short for the Pentagon's Northern Command that was created by Chuckle-Nuts Bush in October 2002. And something's going on with Northcom. We'll get to that tonight, too. So, lots to talk about. I want to share this with you. If you are a parent or you're an aunt or an uncle and, you know, you have little kids, Kathy and I were absolutely flummoxed. We weren't quite sure what to do. We've had a cat for 13 years. The cat is now dead. And it died last Saturday. And it died because we had to have it injected in a veterinarian's office and euthanized. The reason we did that, the cat was 13 years old. It's been with us almost as long as we were married, and of course all of Molly's life. But Tiger had developed end-stage renal disease, and we took him to the vet on Wednesday, and the vet said, well, this does not look good. There's a couple things you might want to try. We went home Friday night after going to the vet. The cat went into absolute convulsions and then lost control of its body from its forelegs down, and it was awful to see. It was really, this is about midnight, right after we got off work last Friday, this was going on. And the cat was in obvious pain and suffering and so on and so forth. So we made the decision that in the morning we would take the cat back to the veterinarian's office and have Tiger euthanized. So in the morning, Saturday morning, Molly came bounding into the bedroom, as she always does, jumped up in bed with me and started screeching about wanting to watch her cartoons. And I said, look, we have to talk for a second here. Something happened with Tiger, and she knew Tiger was sick. And she also knew that we had told her earlier in the week, tried to define the word euthanize for her. We had told her part of being a responsible pet owner is knowing when the pet had to be put down. And she wanted to know, what does that mean? And we refused to tell her, put to sleep. That's ridiculous. We said, put to death, Molly. The cat has to be put to death if it gets to a point where it is suffering. It's not like a human being where you can, you can get palliative care. I didn't say palliative, but I said, you know, you can get pain relief, you can get this, you can get that. But, honey, this is a cat, and the cat's in pretty bad shape. So she came bouncing into the bedroom, mine and Kathy's bedroom, on Saturday morning, wanting to watch television. I said, hey, listen, we got to chat. And I think Molly knew right away. She said, something's wrong with the kitty. And I said, yeah. And I'm afraid today is the day that the kitty will have to be euthanized. Remember, we talked about the word euthanized. And Molly said, you mean made dead? And I said, yes, made dead. And she immediately started crying, like all kids would. And she said, but I'll miss him. And, Kathy had been brushing her teeth, and she came out and sat on the bed, and three of us sat there. You will miss him. And it's really sad, and this is going to be a sad thing to do. And then we explained to her what had happened the night before while she was asleep. And what happened next, I want to share with you, because I think we did the right thing. And we'll be back with the rest of the story. I'm Mike Malloy. There's a half a dozen tragedies from which to pick and choose. The baby that was missing was found in a ditch today. And there's bombs flying, people dying. Not so far away now. Take a beer from the refrigerator and go sit out in the yard.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, Saturday morning last, after our five-year-old had a chance to see a very, very sick cat over the preceding two or three days, she came into the bedroom and we had to tell her that that morning we had made a phone call earlier before she got up to the veterinarian's office and explained the situation and our decision to euthanize Tiger, our 13-year-long companion. And matter of fact, we got Tiger when she was still in a litter. We got her when we moved to Chicago, shortly after we moved to Chicago. Or him. I keep saying her. So Molly sat there and cried and said she, but, you know, and it was fairly wrenching to see a five-year-old try to bargain, trying to negotiate away. The cat's desperate illness, terminal illness, and the fact that the cat had to be euthanized that very morning. Well, once Molly got past that, we all got dressed and took Tiger in his carrier to the vet. And on the way, we asked Molly, we said, now, you have a choice here. You can wait in the car and watch Snow White on your video machine. You can come inside and sit in the waiting room while Mommy and I do this, or you can come with us all the way through the process and watch what happens to Tiger. And she said, I want to come with you. So Kathy and I gave each other that look that parents give each other over the heads of a child who has just made a pretty profound decision. And in that look that passes between parents, it's loaded with conversation without a word being spoken. You think she can handle this? I don't know. What do you think? Well, I don't know. She understands death. She's seen a dead rabbit. She's seen dead birds. Well, but this is her cat. I know, but she said we offered her the choice. All right. All that pew, pew, in a look between parents. You understand. You know what I'm talking about. So we sat inside the waiting room and had to wait. Saturday morning was pretty busy. Had to wait. Finally about, it was late Saturday morning, about 11 o'clock, 11:30. Then it was noon, then it was 12:30, and then they called us in. And we took Tiger out of the carrier, and they gave him a sedative because he was in such bad shape. It was going to be difficult to find a vein to give him the lethal injection. So Molly watched. And very close, I mean, right there, the veterinarian and her assistant and Kathy and I and Molly around the stainless steel table that had a pad on it. And if you ever had a pet, you understand what this is like. This is really painful. It is. I mean, and there's no way to get around it. It's one thing to be a hard-ass Republican or a hard-ass Democrat or whatever, but where it concerns your pet, you know. So they found a vein and put the sedative in, and Molly said, is he dead now? No, not yet. That's just to calm him down, and because the cat at this point was pretty agitated from the suffering it was going through. So after Tiger was fully sedated, then the surgeon went to work, or the veterinarian went to work to find a proper vein to inject the lethal dose, and Molly watched that. And she watched the cat's stomach as it heaved up and down, trying to, you know, draw in air, oxygen. And finally, it stopped. And after the lethal injection, before the breathing stopped, Molly once again put her hands on the cat and said, I'm going to miss you. I love you. Goodbye, Tiger. And the breathing stopped. Well, we came out of the veterinarian's office. We made arrangements for the remains. Came out of the vet's office, and Molly seemed to be distracted. A couple of times she said, I'm going to miss Tiger, and we agreed. But later on that day, we were getting ready to take her to a party, an adult party, but there were going to be kids there. And the strangest thing happened. She had what I guess in an adult would have been considered a complete break with reality. I've never seen my five-year-old go so berserk over what to wear. I'm not going to wear that shirt. Why not, Molly? Because it feels funny on my neck. I'm not going to wear it. just crazy, crazy stuff. And it went on for like an hour. And once again, you know, Kathy and I are trying to figure out what to do. And then, of course, we realized, well, she is redirecting some of this, whatever it was that she felt. I don't know what a five-year-old feels when the five-year-old confronts right up, I mean, right boom, there. Not on a remote basis, not mommy and daddy taking the cat and leaving and coming back later and saying, well, we had to put the cat to sleep. No. Well, Saturday night was not very pleasant. We went to the party. Molly was pretty out of control. Came home. She fell asleep in the car on the way home, got her to bed about 11 o'clock at night. And then Sunday and Monday and today, she was okay. But I just wonder, if we made the right decision in allowing Molly to choose to stare death in the face right there. I mean, it was not, she wasn't 6 inches away from this cat when it died. So, we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Speaking of kids, have you heard about this 10-year-old in West Fork, Arkansas? Goes to elementary school there. A 10-year-old boy, his name is Will Phillips, and he refused to recite the Pledge of Allegiance until gay folk are allowed to marry. Have you ever heard this story? All this started when he refused to say the Pledge of Allegiance at his elementary school. And yesterday, Monday, John Roberts, of CNN on the morning show, interviewed him. And the kid, Will, said he remained seated 4 straight days while his classmates repeated the words, quote, with liberty and justice for all, end quote. This young boy said, I was analyzing the meanings of it because I want to be a lawyer. There isn't really liberty and justice for all. There's, well, gays and lesbians can't marry. And there's still a lot of racism and sexism in the world. Yeah. End quote. That's what this 10-year-old little boy said. And as the story unfolds here, eventually the substitute teacher started giving Will, let's call it grief, over his refusal to repeat the words. And John Roberts said, well, what did you say to that teacher? And the boy said, well, I eventually, very solemnly, with a little bit of malice in my voice, said, ma'am, with all due respect, you can go jump off a bridge, the kid said. And on camera, seated next to the boy, his father covered his face, and the father, of course, was kind of smiling. Dad's name is Jay. Jay Phillips told John Roberts that he thought his son was in a heap of trouble for rebellion in such a manner. Dad said, quote, however, when I got home, I talked to him, and the more I heard from him, the more it became apparent that this wasn't a typical act of juvenile delinquency. This is a very atypical act of juvenile delinquency. He sat for 4 days and took the brunt of the criticism, end quote. And then the father added that Will has apologized in writing to the teacher. The boy said, quote, I've grown up with many people who are gay. I think they should have the rights. All people should. I'm not going to swear that they do, end quote. And then 10-year-old Will said that others at his school did not react well to his stance. The boy said, quote, they Taken from what I said, the assumption I'm gay. In the halls and the cafeteria, I've been repeatedly called a gay wad. John Roberts said, a gay wad? What's a gay wad? Will said, I really don't know, but I think it's a discriminatory name for homosexuals. Gotta love that kid, right? That's another thing. Excuse me, but, you know, a Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah, I was in elementary school when they added under God. I remember that. I remember we came back from summer vacation. I think I was in the fourth, fifth grade. I don't know. Sixth? I really don't remember. I just remember that there are two things we had to do every morning when we went to class. If you were over a certain age, you remember this. You'd show up for class. You'd go in, raise hell, kick, storm, scream, yell, and then the teacher would come in. Everybody get very quiet. Immediately get quiet. And I went to an inner city school, and it didn't make any difference. You know, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Protestant, Catholic, made no difference. Once the teacher walked in the room, you shut your little trap. And then you would stand next to your desk. First you'd sit at your desk, you'd bow your head, and the teacher would read a prayer. Yes, indeedy. Now, it was never, in Jesus' name we ask, it was always at the end of the prayer, it was non-denominational, but it was, it was a religious prayer. And it was non-sectarian. It was just God and this and that and this and that. And then we had to stand next to our desks and put our hands over our hearts and face the corner to the right of the teacher's desk and pledge allegiance to the flag. Now, at the time, you know, I mean, it was just like brushing your teeth or getting on your bicycle. You know, you're a kid and you got to do this stuff because it just rote. It's habit. It doesn't mean anything. But when I got older and started to realize what they were doing to us with that, and of course, the prayer was thrown out in, when was the, court case that Madeleine Murray O'Hare brought to the Supreme Court? Remember they said, well, Madeleine Murray O'Hare threw God out of the public school. No, she didn't. She didn't, you dumbasses. She didn't throw God out of anything. What she did was, insist that the Constitution be, acknowledged and honored. And that's what the Supreme Court ruled. Yep. Okay. But the right-wing crazy people, though, of course, always say, oh, she threw God, she got God, look what happened. Look at all the delinquency and practicing drugs, sex, rock and roll, blah, 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 blah. You know, the usual bat-squeeze rhetoric that these right-wingers yell. But here we are in 2009, and this kid, this 10-year-old boy, says, no, I'm not going to say it because he's got the wisdom. How could this be? How could he have the wisdom, the insight at 10 to say, but that part's not true with liberty and justice for all? It's not true. So therefore, I'm not going to say something's not true. I'm not going to take an oath. I wish I would have been able to do that when I was 10 years old. Say, I'm not going to take an oath to something. What are you talking about? And I grew up at a time when, yeah, I went to an integrated school in an inner city neighborhood, but everybody knew what the reality was. And the reality was there was no liberty and justice for all. Come on. We all said it, though, even the black kids. Because why? Because we were kids. But this 10-year-old, what is that, fifth grade? He said, no, I can't do it. That kind of integrity in a 10-year-old, wow. And by integrity, I mean in the literal sense of the word. He is not disintegrated. He is integrated. He has integrity. So, good luck with this kid. Yeah, he's going to be taunted now. Of course he is. Gay wad. What the hell is that? You little faggot. You know it's going to happen. Of course it's going to happen. But good for him. Good for this kid. And nothing against folks in Arkansas, but this, you know, Arkansas arguably is another buckle of the Bible Belt, just like here. You know, God, guns, and glory. We're in the South, man. Come on. Arkansas is in the South, too. If this would have happened in, you know, one of those really gay places like, what, San Francisco, New York City, it'd be understandable, right? This is Arkansas. So. Good for this kid, and good for his parents. Maybe somebody in the school system, no, this will not happen. I was going to say maybe somebody in the school system will wake up. Why are they telling children? Why are they forcing children, even now, all these years later, 50 years after I was in elementary school, why are they still making children recite a pledge that is essentially meaningless, gibberish? Why? What is up with that? We do not have liberty and justice for all. And we are not one nation indivisible. We are not. There's never been a time except maybe the 1850s when this country has been more fractionalized, ready to split apart. We got people talking about secession. They're jerkasses, of course. You know Rick Perry and Beck and the rest of these morons. But it's still, there's a lot of people out there. We have people running around the woods once again, just like they did during the Clinton years, with their guns and their camo. Oh, I'm going to kill somebody. Liberty and justice for all. So, to this little boy who would never hear anything I've said about his story tonight, I'll say it anyway. Good for you, Will Phillips. Good for you. Good for you. West Fork, Arkansas, huh? And speaking of things gay, here in Atlanta, we've had a newspaper / publication, Southern Voice, that's been around for a long time. And it was the South's main newspaper, I guess I can say that, for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities. Excellent newspaper. Excellent, you know, tabloid. Excellent newspaper. It's been around for, I don't know what, 12, 14 years that I know of. And, more than 20 years. That's right. It goes way back to the mid-80s. Had a circulation of 100,000. And it was one of the several gay newspapers and magazines owned by this company. Other magazines or newspapers in Washington, Blade, the South Florida Blade. All these magazines, newspapers, gay publications were shut down Monday when the parent company, Window Media and United Media, two companies, filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. That means liquidation. It's all over. There has been some excellent writing. I can't speak for the Washington Blade because I don't read it, or the South Florida Blade, but the Southern Voice that I've been reading for a decade and a half in Atlanta had some excellent writing. I mean, real good writing, good staff. It was based here. It was distributed all over the South. Nobody wants to say anything. According to the Associated Press and AOL News and CNN, calls to the group that owned Windows Media, no answer. Nobody's talking. Nobody's saying a thing. And it's a shame when magazines or newspapers go out of publication, but especially a gay publication. Oh, and by the way, if you pick up the story on AOL and read the hate-drenched posts that follow the news of the closing of these newspapers, including the Southern Voice, the hatred and the filth and the garbage is just goddamn unreal. Just unreal. You're in heaven, but you're living.
And coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's 10 before the hour. According to the Miami Herald, the U.S. Supreme Court will not hear a case challenging a decision by the Miami-Dade Florida School Board to remove a children's book about Cuba from public schools. That was one of the announcements the Supreme Court made yesterday. In February, A federal appeals court ruled the school board did not breach the First Amendment when it pulled this book from school libraries a couple of years ago, Vamos a Cuba, We're Going to Cuba, or Let's Go to Cuba, or I guess that's right. A majority opinion said the book, part of a series of books on several nations, presented an inaccurate, that was the court's word, view of life under former Cuban leader Fidel Castro. The ACLU filed an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the High Court yesterday declined to hear the case. Howard Simon, executive director of the ACLU of Florida, said, quote, frankly, this clears the path for the Miami-Dade School Board to remove the entire series of books against which there was not a single protest, end quote. Vamos a Cuba. We go to Cuba. Now, you know why it was pulled, of course. I doubt there was any political propaganda whatsoever in the book, but because Miami is what it is, where it concerns the Cuban exile community that is now in its, what, third generation? And that community determines what the kids are going to learn, just like the community in Arkansas is going to determine what the kids say every morning in school. I don't know. Seems kind of, you know, once again, just fearful nonsense, doesn't it? Huh? Just fearful, scary, spooked out nonsense. Well, we members of the Cuban community here in South Florida cannot have our children reading a book entitled Vamos a Cuba because it doesn't call Castro a dirty, rotten, goddamn communist. Because it doesn't show, you know, on and on and on and on. It doesn't show all the political prisoners. We have political prisoners here. Did the children in Miami-Dade school system learn about the political prisoners we have in the United States? Yeah? Yeah, but Castro in his prisons, I bet they torture people. Well, don't we torture people? We know we do. We don't know about Castro's regime, do we, huh? And how did Castro come to power to begin with? Because the American mafia and a right-wing dictator supported by the CIA, Fulgencio Batista, had turned Cuba into nothing but a gambling whorehouse. And the people of Cuba didn't like it. And so Fidel Castro and Che Guevara and the rest of the people in Cuba decided to overthrow the corrupt, filthy, right-wing government. Do the kids in Miami-Dade learn about that? Do they learn about the regime of Fulgencio Batista? Do they learn what happened, how Batista came to power, what kept him in power? I don't know why I'm getting all pissed off about this. This is not my fight, right? Except, of course, it's been my government. That has a series of my governments that has tried and succeeded in 50 years plus of treating this little island nation 90 miles from Key West, 60 miles from Key West, actually, as some kind of a international threat. And as a result, remember the Cuban Missile Crisis? Well, you don't remember it, but you read about it. Some of you remember it. Which was a holdover from Eisenhower. You know, Kennedy didn't have anything to do with that. And when Kennedy refused to provide air cover for this invasion, his death was determined. It was just a matter of opportunity for Kennedy, and eventually they got him. Now, I'm talking about Bay of Pigs. The Cuban Missile Crisis came later, and then Kennedy's assassination. And now, of course, Cuba is being rediscovered by corporate America because the rest of the world is discovering Cuba. And now that Castro, this hard-ass socialist, is being moved aside, and was he the type of leader you'd like to live under? Not me. I have no problem with socialism. I just don't like totalitarianism. I don't care if it's right or left. I would have liked to have met Fidel Castro. I really would have. I mean, you talk about someone larger than life. I was in high school when the revolution in Cuba occurred. And I can remember our world history teacher, I guess a world history, explaining to us how great this was, that a popular revolution rose up, or a popular movement rose up, became a revolution, overthrew a murderous dictator, and had established a new government under the control of an agrarian reformer. Well, you know, he was only an agrarian reformer for so long, then he became a communist. How long was he an agrarian reformer? What, about 6-8 months? Then he became a communist. So, no, I don't like totalitarianism. I have no problem with socialism. As a matter of fact, I kind of advocate it. So anyway, the book, Vamos a Cuba, not to be available to the kids in elementary school in Miami-Dade, because First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the freedom to publish does not operate in Miami-Dade. It just doesn't. I mean, that's all. You can't ban Vamos a Cuba and then say, but we'll have Vamos a Argentina. No, 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 no. It doesn't work that way. So, no surprise there. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Put my car.
Seven before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Matthew Rothschild, writing in the Progressive, also would like to know what's up with Northcom. The Northcom and NORAD are conducting a joint exercise called Vigilant Shield 09. From November 12th to the 18th, so it's almost over, right? The focus is on homeland defense and civil support. That's according to a Northcom press release. And what they've been doing is testing what they referred to as, quote, a synchronized response of federal, state, local, and international partners in preparation for homeland defense, homeland security, and civil support missions in the United States and abroad, end quote. Damn. This sounds like they're planning for us to be invaded from, I don't know, a force from Planet Nine or something. Northcom, of course, is, like I mentioned earlier, Northern Command, created by Bush in October, by Cheney in October 2002. AFRICOM, that's a new one, that covers Africa. Southern Command. Covers Latin America. Central Command, or CENTCOM, covers Iraq and Afghanistan. You get the point here. Anyway, Vigilant Shield 09, Vigilant Shield, included scenarios to achieve exercise objectives within the maritime, aerospace, ballistic missile defense, cyber, consequence management, strategic communications, and counterterrorism domains, according to the press release. Wow. Hey, man. Northcom's press release also says that other participants in the exercise include the U.S. Strategic Command's Global Lightning 09. Strategic Command, we still have that? I thought that stopped after that movie. Strategic Air Command. Who was in that movie? Who's the guy that's in It's a Wonderful Life? Jimmy Stewart, remember him? This must be great fun for the people who plan this stuff, huh? Because, I mean, who out there really believes, and I'm serious here now, who believes that an exercise whose objectives include maritime, aerospace, ballistic missile defense, cyberspace, consequence management, strategic communications, and counterterrorism domains, who really believes that that's how it works? Will somebody tap NORTHCOM or CENTCOM or DUCOM or GOCOM or ONECOM or somebody on the shoulder and say, yo, look, hey, two acts of terrorism on U.S. soil, one by an American citizen wiped out 168 people in a building being blown up. The other one, 15 Saudis came to this country and blew up the trade towers and the Pentagon and wiped out another 3,000 people. And they did it with airplanes, box cutters, hijackings. What in the hell are you talking about with all these goofy exercises? This is madness. The Pentagon's also involved in this exercise is something from the Pentagon called Bulwark Defender 09. They've got to be kidding. Bulwark? Wasn't that a movie? Well, that was Bulworth. Bulworth. This is Bulwark. Bulwark. B-U-L-W-R-K. How do you say that? Bulwark Defender 09. It's a cyberspace protection outfit of the Pentagon. Oh yeah? Really? The Pentagon that's constantly being hacked? Something called the Canada Command Determined Dragon also is participating. Hey, you Canadian listeners, what the hell is Determined Dragon? What is the Canada Command? Is that something we own, or do y'all own it? What is that? Determined Dragon? Oh, also participating is the California National Guard and California's, quote, Golden Guardian? What the hell is a Golden Guardian? California's involvement, according to Matthew Rothschild, appears to center around planning for a catastrophic earthquake. A press release from Schwarzenegger's office says, under the leadership, under the leadership of Governor Schwarzenegger, do that. Go ahead. Say that. Under the leadership of Governor Schwarzenegger.
No pressure, right?
Okay.
Under the leadership of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And direction of his Office of Homeland Security.
And the direction of his Office of Homeland Security.
The nation's largest
state.
Never mind. The nation's largest state.
I am having a sale. All staplers now half off. See? I just stapled my forehead. Doesn't even hurt.
The nation's largest state-sponsored emergency exercise will take place November 13th through 18th. That's a press release from Schwarzenegger's office. Golden Guardian 2008 tests California's capability to respond and recover during a major catastrophic earthquake. It says NORTHCOM is being shy about giving additional information about Vigilant Shield 09. When Rothschild called for a fact sheet on it, he was told there was none. But the Pentagon did issue a fact sheet for Vigilant Shield 08. Why not 09? And according to Rothschild, last year's exercise included, quote, the simulated detonation of three nuclear dispersal devices, end quote. The fact sheet stressed the need to support a, quote, civilian-led response and to exercise defense support of civil authorities. Oh, that means peeing all over the Posse Comitatus Act. I get that. Including involvement in, quote, critical infrastructure protection events and coordinating anti-terrorism force protection activities. Huh? Is that spooky? What is critical infrastructure protection events? What is that, a circus? They go to the Hoover Dam and have a circus? High Wire Act? What the hell? Come on, can't you guys ever speak English? No, of course not. The fact sheet ended, last year's fact sheet ended by saying, quote, there will be minimal deployment of active duty forces and no cross-border deployments. We anticipate little to no direct impact on local communities. Now, end quote. That was from last year. This year they didn't even issue that. NORTHCOM, as Rothschild writes, has been in the news lately after Pentagon designated it a battle-tested unit, fighting unit from the war in Iraq. And that, of course, is against the law, since the Army isn't supposed to be patrolling our own country. But it doesn't work that way anymore. Not in the age of Bush, and now apparently Obama, or somebody in the Obama administration is doing this. And on top of all that, NORTHCOM has been up to its eyeballs in getting peace groups spied upon. Oh, Jesus, NORTHCOM, huh? So why, and NORTHCOM also was in the loop at the Republican convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. Remember that? And I agree with Rothschild. Is it too much to ask Congress to look into NORTHCOM and find out? You know, it sounds just too much like Northwoods. And if you don't know what Northwoods was, look it up. Do a search on Google and you'll be very surprised. Regarding specialists, Alexis, Army specialist who did not have someone to take care of her 11-month-old son, and the Army says get on the plane anyway. This is from CJ in Nanaimo, British Columbia, Canada. Regarding specialist Alexis's situation, we've contributed $50 to her defense fund and made an offer to take care of her son if no one else makes an offer. We're Canucks, so there are difficulties in such an arrangement, like visas and passports for the tyke, probably on a terrorist watch list already. Keep up the good work, Mike. You're our favored source of counter-propaganda. Thanks, CJ. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer today. Past the hour. So, this is hard to believe. Did Sandy send this in? The religious right is now distributing little tchotchkes with the following text included. Pray for Obama, Psalm 109, verse 8. And Sandy writes, as I learned tonight on the Rachel Maddow show, Psalm 109, verse 8 says, let his days be few, let another take his office, which is followed by Psalm 109:9 that says, may his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. Don't you love these classy, putrid Republicans, huh? You slimy bastards. You really turn my stomach. And Sandy, I think if Sandy writes, I hate these people, like Tim, who wouldn't be bothered by killing people, last Friday's caller. They want someone to kill the president, and they laugh about it. Let his days be few. Let another take his office. May his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. You scummy bastards. You dirty, dirty, dirty scummy bastards. It's just unbelievable, huh? Those are Christians. Those are not Jews saying that. Those are not Hindus or Buddhists or Muslims. Those are Christians saying that. Those are Christians, huh? Christians. You know, I get emails from people every once in a while who just are so offended because I will say goddamn on the air. Or they'll be so offended because I am in their twisted little minds taking God's name in vain. Are you people serious? Are you serious? You subscribe to a religion that has adherents that advocate that? And you get in my case because I use rough language on this program sometimes because I am so completely sick and disgusted with you, religious freaks. I don't care if you're Christian, Jew, Muslim. I don't care. All of you turn my stomach. You really do. You have brought more disaster to the human race. Oh, and where's that? Yeah, here's another one. Where's this? Oh, Lord, come on. I can't find anything tonight. Oh, well. Oh, here it is. This is Associated Press. Warren just sent this to me. The White House, this is from today. The White House rebuked Israel with heavy criticism Tuesday after the Jerusalem city government moved toward the construction of 900 additional housing units in a Jewish neighborhood in East Jerusalem, which Palestinians claim for the capital of their future state, end quote. And Warren writes, isn't it pretty obvious that Israel has no intention of seeking peace with the Palestinians? Why the hell are we supporting Israel when essentially they tell us to get lost? Why do we continue to send them billions of dollars of aid? And then something, I'm not going to do the whole thing tonight because it's very lengthy, but something that Ray McGovern has out right now to consortiumnews.com. Once again, going back to these trials that are going to take place in New York City now, that the right-wing crazy bastards in this country are getting, once again, they're spewing out their fear and cowardice. But McGovern says a media commentary on this upcoming 9/11 trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has raised concerns that state secrets may be divulged, including details about how the Bush administration used torture to extract evidence about Al-Qaeda. Well, sure. ACLU attorney, the way he put it, according to New York Times on Sunday, quote, I think we're going to shine a light on something that a lot of people don't want to look at, end quote. Eric Holder says, no problem. He claims to have, quote, great confidence, end quote, that other evidence, apart from what may have been gleaned from the 183 times Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded, for example, other evidence will suffice to convict him. Maybe so, McGovern writes, but what the fawning corporate media, or FCM, have so far neglected is the likelihood that the testimony will be so public that they will have to break their studied silence about why Sheikh Mohammed and his associates say they orchestrated the attacks of 9/11. Let me digress. We'll come back to this after the break. But, you know, McGovern is hitting the point here that we've talked about this on this program, you and I. Nobody wants to talk about the real reason. You know, Osama bin Laden said that the West had to get, the United States had to get its troops out of the holy sites for Islam. That would be Saudi Arabia that contains Mecca and Medina. Isn't Medina where the Prophet Muhammad was said to have risen? You know, more religious mythology, right? Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Now she gets her kicks in Stepney, not in Knightsbridge anymore. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. So don't.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
So, Ray McGovern writing at, I think, consortiumnews.com. The handful of real journalists that are left ask the right questions. What if Khaled Sheikh Mohammed starts to really put out the truth about why he and his associates say they orchestrated the attacks of 9/11? This is something mainstream media in this country, pukes every one of them, don't care about. You see, they have created this false argument that one of several. They hate us because we're advanced, and they're not. They hate us because we're Muslim, and they're not. You know, and nobody talks about the real reasons. And there was a brief flurry of dispatches shortly after the attack in 2001, where Osama bin Laden, if you want to believe it was really him, pretty much declared, and he had been declaring, that the reason for the attack, and prior to the attack, the reason that something bad was going to happen is because there were infidel troops in the holy sites of Islam. And, okay, I mean, if people are going to be crazy enough to believe in some religious dogma, I don't care what it is, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, I don't care. If people are going to be crazy enough to subscribe to that stuff, then, yeah, they're going to get very pissed off if all of a sudden some foreign country sends soldiers and tanks and guns and you know, infidels, people who see their religion as a false, and then bivouacs troops in their country near, close enough anyway, to the two holiest sites in Islam, Medina and Mecca. Well, of course they're going to get pissed off, especially the fundamentalists. What would happen? You know, why bother? But, you know, what would happen if Iran decided to bring troops and place them near the gravesite of Jerry Falwell? You know, I'm being stupid, but you understand what I'm saying. Come on. Why is this hard for Americans to understand? This is a part that I don't get. I just don't get this. You know, we stomp around with our military or our surrogate military, the Israelis. Of course, they like to consider us their surrogate, but, you know, you can hash that out, you know, for hours and hours and hours. But we, you know, we send our military force into countries that want nothing to do with us whatsoever. Certainly not these Muslim countries, to whom the Crusades was yesterday afternoon. You know, we have no historical sense in this country for a number of reasons, because most of us are from somewhere else. A, B, the country's only been the country for 2 years? Okay. So we don't have an historical sense here. Plus, we're dumber than dog droppings in this country where it concerns history. But the rest of the world isn't. They remember this stuff. They write about it. Legends, songs, poetry. It becomes part of their national persona. So here's the United States stomping around on Israel, stomping on people in the Middle East who don't want to be stomped on. But because they don't have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of nuclear weapons like Israel and the United States has, and since they don't have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of troops fully armed to the teeth, like the United States and Israel does, what can they do? Well, eventually they send 19 people to this country with box cutters, and they kill 3,500 people, bring down the symbol of global capitalism that based in this country, at least it was in 2001, the trade towers, and go after the Pentagon. And if you believe the official story, also make a move on the capital of the United States. Now, why did they do that? George W. Bush said it was because they don't like freedom. We have houses and they don't. You know, the typical dumbass statements that George Bush was prone to say every time he opened his mouth. But as Ray McGovern points out, what the fawning corporate media have so far neglected is the likelihood that the testimony in this trial will be so public that they, corporate media, will have to break their silence about why Sheikh Mohammed and his associates say they orchestrated the attacks 9/11. For reasons that are painfully obvious, corporate media have done their best to ignore or bury the role that Israel's repression of the Palestinians has played in motivating 9/11 attacks and other anti-Western terrorism. McGovern also says it's not like there's no evidence of this key issue. Rather, it appears that the Israel-Palestine connection is pretty much kept off limits for discussion. Why, of course it is. You don't hear about this issue ever in mainstream media. Never. Never. Why is that? McGovern says, as Sheikh Mohammed and the other alleged 9/11 conspirators go to trial, corporate media's tacit but tight embargo will be under great strain. Eyes will have to be averted from the sensitive Israeli-Palestinian motive even more than from the torture, which most Americans know about, and God help us, are willing to explain away. But you can't explain away the Israeli-Palestinian issue. You cannot explain away one of the other issues, the quartering of U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia. Now, what did Bush do after September 11, 2001? And the fawning corporate media did very little to connect the dots for you and for me. What Bush did was got U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia at the cost of 3,000 plus American citizens and non-American people who were killed on September 11, 2001. And all that had to have happened, I think, I really do believe this, if we had never put troops there to begin with, what the hell are we doing? Because these fat-ass Saudi Arabian coward boys who like to fly around in their expensive jet fighters, but God forbid they should ever go into combat, because they wanted somebody to protect their wealthy asses and their gold, their oil wells, they bring in U.S. military. And the religious fundamentalists in Saudi Arabia didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. Warned us over and over and over again. Get out of here. Get your infidel troops out of our holy sites. Get out of here. And what do? Oh, sit down, shut up. Haji man. And we know what happened. And the reaction to what happened, you know, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion, reinvasion of Iraq and occupation of both countries is madness. It's just absolute madness. And then the other issue, of course, is the ongoing 50-year-old Israeli-Palestinian issue that nobody in this country will honestly, in mainstream media, you can get all the information you could possibly want in websites, blog sites, non-mainstream media. But mainstream media, where most Americans get most of their news, try getting some factual information about the Israeli-Palestinian issue on Fox. Try it on ABC. Try it on NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, any place. You're not going to get it. Why is that? Got to be an answer. Got to be an answer. So anyway, the Israeli-Palestinian connection is pretty much kept off limits for discussion, Ray McGovern says. He goes on to say, yet as Sheikh Mohammed and the other conspirators go to trial, the corporate media's tight embargo will be under great strain. How is NBC, ABC, CBS not going to talk about it? Well, they'll figure out a way. And McGovern says, to refresh our memories, let's recall the bromides we were fed by the likes of George W. Bush about why the terrorists attacked us on 9/11. Rather than mentioning long-held grievances expressed by many Arabs, such as Western intrusion into their region, Washington's propping up of autocrats who enrich themselves and deals with multinational oil companies, and Israel's military occupation of Palestinian territory. Besides all that, Bush told the American people that, quote, the terrorists hate our freedoms, end quote. Oh, really? They hate our freedoms. Did, during the Iranian hostage crisis in 1979, did anyone have the temerity to mention what happened in 1953? And again, remember, we have no historical sense in this country. We have no memory. But to the Iranians, 1953, when you're in 1979, 1953 was only 26 years ago. And what did we do in 1953? That's right. We deliberately, consciously, and with malice aforethought, overthrew their government. Why? Because Mohammad Mossadegh, who had been elected the leader of Iran, had decided to, you know, nationalize the nascent oil companies, the British-American oil companies that were taking over their resources. Mohammad Mossadegh said, oh, no. And the U.S. and Great Britain said, oh, yes. The sale from Saturn is here, the best deals ever on a Saturn, with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited, and you must take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It's about 10 before the hour. So back to this combination of fear on the part of the right-wing cowards in this country about bringing these people that have been held in Guantanamo or other places all these years, tortured, imprisoned, to New York City for trial. Right-wingers want to instill fear in the American public that something terrible is going to happen, although it is their own fear that they're projecting, and their utter contempt and disrespect for the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law, which they despise. Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, Sean Hannity, all, you know, and the people who are educated, that crew is not educated, but the people who are educated right-wing nuts in this country are terrified of the truth coming out, and they're terrified. I hate the Constitution because they are corporate fascists, every single one of them. And the documents that we have tried to live by and failed over the past 230-plus years were not designed for corporate fascists. They were designed instead for people who are interested in self-government, which, as an experiment, has failed. But all of this stuff is kind of coalescing around these trials in New York with the alleged bombers, or the organizers. The bombers are all dead, of course. Hello. But the people who organized and orchestrated, according to the official story, if, you know, one chooses to believe that. So, one of the fears is at trial, some truth may come out, at least truth that mainstream media in this country, this flaccid, disgusting, corporate-owned mainstream media might have to take a look at. And they're not going to do that. Remember, the object of television, which is where most people in this country get most of their news and information, what they think is news information, the object of television is to make you forget. That's all. That is the primary function of television, to make you forget, period. Dick Cheney reprising Bush's lie to the American people that the terrorists hate our freedoms, According to Ray McGovern, former Vice President Dick Cheney reprised that feel-good theme in a speech to the American Enterprise Institute on May 21st. Cheney said the terrorists hate, quote, all the things that make us a force for good in the world, for liberty, for human rights, for the rational, peaceful resolution of differences, end quote. He said that. Son of a bitch. And we have military forces in how many countries? 70, 80, 90, 110, 120? We slaughtered 2.5 to 3 million Indochinese. We have murdered and left their country, the country of Iraq, an absolute wasteland of depleted uranium after murdering how many hundreds of thousands of their people? And Dick Cheney? And we're threatening to nuke Iran? And Dick Cheney says, we're a force for good in the world. We're for liberty. Oh, please, for human rights, give me a goddamn break. For the rational, peaceful resolution of differences. Really, Dick? Is that what we do? You really do think. No, you're cued into the fact that the American people are dumber than dog snot. Oh, yes, the peaceful resolution of differences. What would those differences be, Dick? All those Iraqis, 27 million of them, sitting on our oil, right? Okay, we want the oil. They won't give it to us. All right, we tried peaceful. Now just bomb the hell out of them, right? You know, war is just diplomacy by other means, right, Dick? All the things that make us a force for good in the world. Liberty? We are... You know, why even bother to break that down, huh? Why even bother? I guess we have demonstrated our propensity to encourage liberty around the earth. We've really demonstrated that, in the past, oh, I don't know, pick a number, 30, 40, 50 years, haven't we, huh? We demonstrate it by... supporting Pinochet in Chile after the assassination of their elected leader. We've demonstrated it in Central America, haven't we, Dick? Huh? By supporting right-wing death squad military regimes while we plundered that part of the Western Hemisphere, right, Dick? We also supported liberty in Vietnam, didn't we? Huh? Didn't we support liberty in Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand, didn't we? Laos, not Thailand, Laos, did we do a good, how about liberty in the Philippines, right, with the Marcos crime syndicate? There was liberty for you. You want me to go on, Dick, you dumb son of a bitch, you. On the other hand, you're not such a dumb son of a bitch because you understand that you're talking to the American Enterprise Institute and by extension, the American people. And, the American people are just an extension of the American Enterprise Institute. In other words, a collection of dumbasses. Completely ignorant of their own immediate and long-term history. Wow. Ray McGovern says some observers listening to that speech might have found those qualities that Cheney was mentioning, liberty, human rights, and all that, kind of strange for Cheney to cite, given his role in violating constitutional rights, torturing people, and spreading falsehoods and lies to justify an aggressive war in Iraq. But Cheney knows something that mainstream media understands. We are dumb, stupid, ignorant savages in the United States of America. Always have been, apparently always will be. Welcome back. It is just about 7 past the hour here on the Malloy program. And other places, too, huh? The decision to try the detainees from Guantanamo in a U.S. court in New York City, not far from where the bombing of the World Trade Center took place and 3,000 people died, has really inspired the right wing to their usual filth. Because the right wing, the Republicans, the conservatives in this country really hate this country. They hate its institutions. They hate the way we have attempted to and utterly failed to govern ourselves. They want fascism and they want it now. They also want to get rid of the first 10 amendments of the U.S. Constitution, our so-called Bill of Rights, because that is communism pure and simple. And on and on and on and on. So when Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others are brought to this country for trial, it's going to be a little bit different from the way it would be in a military tribunal situation, brought to this country and tried in U.S. civilian courts, as other terrorists have been, other alleged terrorists have been. They will be protected by our laws. And the rules of evidence that apply in a courtroom will apply in these cases. The right-wingers, the Republicans, the conservatives hate this. They want it done the same way the torture was done, in a dirty, dank room someplace with as few witnesses as possible. Bring them in, tell them what they're charged with, have a 10-minute trial, find them guilty, take them out and shoot them. But the rule of law that these right-wing sons of bitches screamed and bleated and yelled for during the impeachment of Bill Clinton will now be applied to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and other detainees in Guantanamo. And this, they, the Americans, cannot stand. The American fascists, the pigs, the right-wingers, the filth, they can't stand that. And it's going to happen. And out of these trials may come some truth that is unexpected, unwanted, and could have a profound effect on, oh, never mind, strike that. It's not going to have a profound effect on anything. Cheney also let slip, he inadvertently acknowledged during the speech we've been quoting, the Israeli albatross that hangs around the neck of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. This is what he said, quote, they, the terrorists, have never lacked for grievances against the United States. Our belief in freedom of speech and religion, our belief in equal rights for women, our support for Israel, these are the true sources of resentment, end quote. Dick Cheney. And yet, as McGovern points out, quote, our support for Israel, end quote, is hardly ever included in these formulations, but Cheney at least got that part right when he gave the speech. Now, rarely in the corporate media, not even often on the web, does one find Sheikh Mohammed's explanations for what motivated him to, quote, mastermind, end quote, 9/11. Apparently, few pundits have made it as far as page 147 of the 9/11 Commission report. The drafters of this report were at work on it when they learned that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had been captured. They knew that he earned a degree in mechanical engineering from North Carolina A&T in Greensboro, North Carolina, 1986, before going to Afghanistan to fight the Russian occupier. Did you know that, truth seeker? And it seems, as Ray McGovern writes, it seems their first assumption was that he suffered, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, some major indignity at the hands of Americans in Greensboro. Thus, the strange wording of one major finding on page 147 of the 9/11 Commission report. Here it is. Quote, by his own account, KSM, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM's animus toward the United States stemmed not from his experience there as a student, but rather from his violent disagreement with U.S. foreign policy favoring Israel, end quote. Moreover, the footnote section reveals that KSM was not the only, quote, mastermind, end quote, terrorist motivated by, quote, U.S. foreign policy favoring Israel, end quote. Although in the footnote, The commission dances around a specific reference to Israel, leaving it to the reader to infer that point from the context. Note the missing words in this footnote on page 488, quote, on KSM's rationale for attacking the United States, see intelligence report, interrogation of KSM, September 5, 2003. In this regard, KSM statements echo those of Youssef, who delivered an extensive polemic against U.S. foreign policy at his January 1998 sentencing, end quote, the footnote read. Now, who is Youssef? He was the mastermind of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. That was the one on February 26, 1993, when a car bomb was detonated below Tower 1, bringing both towers down. I'm sorry, in Tower 1. It was intended, that bomb was intended to bring both towers down, killing thousands of people. It failed to accomplish that, but the bombing did kill six people and injured over 1,000. And what was the motive? Ramzi Youssef spelled out his motive in a letter to the New York Times after the bombing. Here's what he said, quote, we declare our responsibility for the explosion on the mentioned building. This action was done in response for the American political, economic, and military support to Israel, the state of terrorism, and to the rest of the dictator countries in the region, end quote. Now, Ramzi Youssef was captured in Pakistan in 1995, imprisoned in New York City, held there until his trial. On November 12, 1997, he was convicted of seditious conspiracy, sentenced the following January to life in prison without parole, currently being held at the high-security Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado. And it goes on. McGovern's article at consortiumnews.com goes on. The point being that the unadulterated support, the complete support that the United States gives Israel and Israel gives the United States where it concerns our stomping on Muslim and Arab countries in the Middle East and their people is the reason for this. And of course, Americans can't handle that. We just can't handle it. There's no way. I remember back in the 80s during the first Intifada when I was working at WSB in Atlanta. After spending some time trying to understand the historical context, both immediate and long-term, ancient, if you want to go that far, as to why these cousins were determined to kill each other over a scrap of land in the Middle East, after spending a lot of time, a lot of energy trying to understand it, I think I finally got a grasp on it, but I was told in no uncertain terms that my position, if it were pro-Palestinian, which it was not, it was pro-peace, pro-understanding, but if my position were pro-Palestinian, I had better get rid of that real quick. Why? Well, because advertisers will not support your program if you do that. But this is Georgia. Nobody down here likes Jews anyway. Come on, this is Georgia. You kidding me? They bombed the temple in this city back in what, 1960? Come on. So the warning was very clear and very specific. And I persisted, and eventually WSB fired me and replaced me with Dr. Laura. But it is impossible for Americans to accept, and this I don't understand. You know, why not accept both sides of this hideous, horrible, mutilated card? We failed. We failed in the 30s and 40s. We failed in not rescuing the Jewish people before they were to be burned alive by the Nazis. We turned them away. We participated in a huge conspiracy to kill the Jews. We participated with just about every other country on earth to do that. And that's the first part of this hideous equation. The second part is that out of that guilt has arisen this utter and absolute persecution of the Palestinians. We are and have been and the proof is all around us, been playing with lighted sticks of dynamite all these years. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle, or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited, and you have to take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It is 21 past the hour. Well, the trials of the detainees from, some of them anyway, from Guantanamo, the trials are certainly going to produce some interesting testimony. I wonder how much of it will be reported on by American media. Maybe this will be their excuse. You know, they'll say, well, you know, the trials are news. We have to report them. No, come on. Are you crazy? Roz and Canter writes, Mike, the following is a real catch-22. This was in the news today. The poor Palestinians, they just can't win. I can see a war breaking out over the Temple Mount any day now. On Sunday, Roz writes, Chief Palestinian negotiator Saeb Erekat said, they would, quote, go to the UN Security Council to ask for recognition of an independent Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital and with the June 1967 borders. And then from Brussels, I believe today, the European Union's Swedish presidency said Tuesday that it was premature to recognize a Palestinian state, even as its leaders prepare to seek such recognition from the UN Security Council. Swedish Foreign Minister Carl Bildt, whose country holds the EU's rotating presidency right now, told reporters in Brussels, quote, I don't think we're there yet, end quote. He went on to say, I would hope that we would be in a position to recognize the Palestinian state, but there has to be one first. So I think it is somewhat premature, end quote. Notice the catch-22. Yeah, we want to recognize a Palestinian state, but there has to be one for us to recognize. But if we don't recognize the right of the Palestinians to a state, then how can a state, and if the Israeli settlers in continue to build 900 apartment, boom, boom, and everything collapses into madness. So, yeah, Roz is probably right. There's probably very little daylight left between trying to avert a major catastrophe in Israel-Palestine and trying to find a peaceful solution with the Likudniks in control again in Israel and the head of the Palestinian Authority saying he's not going to run again, he's probably going to resign because he's given up, and with Barack Obama focused on waging war rather than waging peace, or at least apparently so, we're kind of screwed, right? You see any way out of this? What do you see? Come on. What do you folks see? Regarding the trials here, I got this, I guess, yesterday or today from John. Mike, why was it okay to try General Noriega in the American Civilian Corps? After all, we invaded Panama with our armed forces, captured it, kidnapped him from his country, and brought him to the U.S. for trial. But not the mastermind of 9/11? The mastermind of 9/11 was been forgotten, right? Oh, he wasn't? Is that the reason we invaded two countries looking for him just to fool the real mastermind to think and thus be more easily captured? We were on the wrong trail? I don't know. I just give up. Omar Abdel Rahman, Sheikh, the blind Sheikh, Egyptian Muslim leader. Currently serving a life sentence, no parole, Butner Medical Center. Butner, North Carolina. He was convicted of seditious conspiracy with others, which requires only that a crime be planned, not that it necessarily be attempted. His prosecution also, just like, I forget his name, I just mentioned him last hour. His prosecution drove the investigations of the World Trade Center 1993 bombings. Ramzi Youssef. And Noriega, of course, in 1992, was convicted under federal charges of cocaine trafficking, racketeering, money laundering in Miami, Florida, sentenced to 40 years in prison, later reduced to 30. So when the right-wingers in this country, the cowardly, disgusting right-wingers in this country start bleating and whining and spreading their fear and their stink all over the United States that we can't try terrorists or can't put people on trial for terrorism, excuse me, when we have done exactly that in the past and found them guilty and sentenced them to life without parole. But when these, when the stink of Republicans, the stink of their fear and their disgust of the U.S. Constitution, when it starts to leak out, you have to find out why. And I think Ray McGovern has hit on the reason. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no...
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. One last email here. The phones are open now if you'd like to call in. 877-996-2556. This comes from... Colonel DXP, I'll just leave it at that. United States Marine Corps. Mike, don't argue with those dumb country club bastards regarding the trial in New York City. The single-digit low-frequency vermin got what they wanted, and they are going to lose their ass. It is going to cost at least $250,000 a month to try this case. I expect to be retired in... blank, when this blank is over. Love your show. You got friends on every Marine post in the effing world. he also wrote, the September 11, 2001 attack on the World Trade Center was an act of terrorism, not an act of war. In fact, no war has been declared yet. The defendants were not and are not soldiers. They are criminals. Therefore, the proper venue for the trials for these crimes is the U.S. District Court in New York. See the pertinent part of the Sixth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. It happened in New York. Pending a motion for change of venue that is granted, the trial must be held in New York where the crime shall have been committed. Try them in New York or leave them the F alone. And then rights under the Sixth Amendment. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. These are the facts, Colonel Blank writes, and they are not in dispute. And he signs off, Colonel blank, 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 U.S. Marine Corps, you never met an MF-er quite like me. Okay. I just don't understand. Well, I mean, I do understand the reluctance on the part of the cowardly right-wing chicken hawks in this country who are afraid of everything, and they want everybody else to be afraid of everything. That's all they're about. And when somebody who understands due process, even to the slight extent that I do, or the full extent, like an attorney or an ACLU or a colonel in the United States Marine Corps, that doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter to these right-wing cowards. They just pee their pants. They're big talkers, aren't they? Huh? Big talkers. Hey, let's him and you fight. They're instigators. They want to see people bloodying each other on the street. They want to see countries invaded. They want to see somebody shoot the president of the United States. This is what Glenn Beck and Michelle Malkin and Sean Hannity and the pig man and all these people want to see. They want to see an assassination, and that's what they push for constantly, constantly, unendingly. And yet they are cowardly little bastards who, if you saw them on the street, grabbed one of them by the collar, took him behind a dumpster, and threatened to beat them up, they would just whine and pee their pants again. And yet these are the ones, and they're multimillionaires, every one of them, these are the ones who try to infect the rest of the country and do a pretty good job of it with their fear. And there's so many people in this country who are willing to be scared by these morons.
Oh, he's not the president. Oh, where's the birth certificate? Oh, well, health care for everybody is going to hurt me. Oh, the terrorists are coming. The terrorists are coming.
Jesus, God, how many times have we seen this movie? Remember the Vietnamese were going to invade San Diego, right? Where one of the biggest naval bases in the United States is located. But never mind. And the Sandinistas were going to invade Port Arthur, Texas, right? What else? Oh, yeah, the Cubans were going to come in through Texas or through Florida, right? What else? And the one time that there was a real threat, these cowardly sons of bitches allowed it to happen. They allowed it to happen. Man, I get tired of these people. I'd love to live in a place where there were no right-wingers, no conservatives, no Republicans, where their smell was not all over the place, and their fear and their contempt. Bastards. All right, Mike's in Chicago. We missed you last night, didn't we?
Yeah, sorry, Mike. I hate to open yesterday's mail all over again, but the whole bowing thing with Obama, do you happen to remember how did Bush used to meet the Bin Laden family when they used to run Carlisle together? Did they bow, or was it a reach around? Or
yeah, it was a reach around and hand holding and mouth kissing, tonguing each other. It just, oh my God.
But I wanted to ask you your opinion on this. The New York route of justice or the military tribunal, the New York route, we would be able, under the free press, be able to have the information that they were tortured. But under the military, wouldn't Mohammed and the rest of them thus be considered prisoners of war, thus being protected under the Geneva Convention, so we could finally bring Bush and Cheney up on war crime charges?
You know, I don't know. That's a tough legal question, because we never did declare war on anybody, A. B, if you remember, they made up a whole new category of people who fight. They were called enemy combatants.
That's right. That euphemism they threw out.
Yeah, there's no, I don't think that term exists anywhere in the law. I don't think it exists in directives that comprise the Geneva Conventions. I don't think they exist anywhere in the results of the Nuremberg trials or any military court. Or any type of court anywhere in the history of the human race. Enemy combatants as a legal term that subjects them to the loss of all rights and imprisonment without trial, without confronting witnesses, without anything.
Yeah, and you know what I don't understand? Why don't the Republicans just come out and say, if we have it in New York, everyone's going to find out that we tortured him 182 times?
Because Republicans are, first, liars, secondly, cowards, third, sneaks, and fourth, they hate this country. So don't expect anything ever that makes any sense from a Republican, Mike. Honest to God.
No, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, Mike, thanks very much for the time. It was good talking to you, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. Always do. Thanks. John is in Diamond Bar, California, listening on KTLK. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I've talked to you a few times. Hey, I wanted to point out that to your listeners that you got to believe that Obama, who's a Harvard Law School graduate, and Eric Holder, and the resources of the Justice Department have already judged what admissible, I state the word admissible evidence, that they are going to produce at trial, knowing that they'll probably have a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm.
What the right wing is worried about is the torture, the lack of due process, the long detainment, you know, all the things that this country is detested,
mm-hmm.
with Russia and the gulags and stuff like that coming out. But the point I want to make is I know the Justice Department believes they can win this case without having to use the evidence that was illegally obtained by the Bush administration.
Right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't bother to do it because they know that if they lose the case, it would be disastrous.
Well, and that's true. And I think Eric Holder even said that there is enough of other evidence that doesn't even have to get close to the torture stuff and the preventive detention and all these weird terms they made up.
That's right. And you got to remember, a federal judge controls the case. It goes by the prosecution. If the prosecution uses only admissible evidence and it was obtained above board according to law, if the defense tries to go off on a tangent with torture and stuff like that, the judge will keep it out because it's irrelevant, because mm-hmm. the evidence that's produced by the prosecution was obtained legally. So he'll probably keep it out anyway.
So only part of the truth is going to out in these trials or trial, and the American people are going to remain just as ignorant as Bush would have kept us.
That's a good point. I wish that it would get off on some of these tangents so that we could show the world that we're not afraid to show our dirty linen because, you know, we're supposed to be the country with the best Justice Department in the whole the world.
But isn't it true? You're an attorney. Isn't it true that there are certain instances, football, a professional football, war, and trials, things do not turn out the way, no matter how carefully defense and prosecution comes to prior agreements and discovery and so on and so forth, things can go completely nuts.
Yes, to a certain point. But if you really prepare yourself and do it correctly, things will turn out the way the Justice Department plans it to. And I really think it's an affront to all attorneys and judges in this country to think that the mighty federal court system in New York can't handle this case and the prosecution can't put on admissible evidence and get these guys convicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the part that's kind of...
So what are we afraid of, Mike?
I know. I hear you. John, got a boogie. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky.
Is there a flag upon your house?
time before the hour. Thanks to our usual gang of reprobates here. Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kay Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay, who's the executive producer of this program. James is in Portland, listening on KPOJ. Hey, James.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not bad.
Good.
The last time we talked was a couple years ago, and we were talking about how fascism, it takes, you know, steps to get there.
Yeah, you remember that from that long ago?
I seem to think that we are in a fascist state. Now, it's pretty much the worst as it's going to get in this country, at least.
You really think so?
I really think
so. See, I disagree. And again, I would say that we're going to wind up with Mussolini-style fascism, which is corporatism. And I don't think that game is even... Given the long-term goals of corporate America, I don't think that game has even begun yet. Don't forget, last week, was it last week when I shared with the listeners this thing? It was on a New York Times blog, I believe, that the idea is being put out there now that American workers are being paid too much and that their wages have to come down in order to compete on a global market. Now, who's saying that? Department of Labor? Unions? No. Corporate America is saying that. We are so close to corporatism. And I think it's going to be much, much, much worse. It's over in this country, the experiment with self-government, with representative government. It really, truly is over. It may be revitalized at some point down the road, but right now it's over.
That's true. Right. And I think that means that since it's gotten so bad that, you know, it's going to start getting better step by step. But, you know, obviously we still have to fight for it.
Well, I appreciate your optimism. I really do. But when you have 535 members of the House and the Senate who together can't come up with legislation that gives Americans...